right, welcome in Wrong Side of the Pond. He is DJ Switzer. I'm Jeremy Lance, and it's our Christmas episode.
Right.
So maybe you're like me, and you're having to drive a long way this week. Hopefully you're listening to us now, and we're making this less sucky for you.
Or you're like me, and you're stuck at home with all your family coming in, staying at your house, and you put this on to escape from all the noise and crowds that are in your house.
So whatever it is this podcast is for you, we hope it helps you out.
Yeah, maybe on a brand new shiny device.
Yeah.
Like a new phone, laptop, tablet. Sure. People still get tablets these days? Is that the kids you're using?
I hope so. I bought all my children are getting tablets.
Okay, well, make sure you put a podcast app on all those.
I don't know.
And get those on.
Okay.
Downloads, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You got to get those download numbers
up. That's right.
Got to get my kids download them.
That's right.
And this is also our nice way of telling you we're not doing an episode next week.
No, we're not. We're going to take a little break.
So you enjoyed this.
I think this
is this is going to need to be good enough for you.
This might be the furthest we've ever made it into a season without actually taking a break.
Which is weird because I feel like we're both more busy than we've been in past years.
Significantly.
Yeah.
So congrats, listeners. We're less lazy.
We're awesome.
We'll go with that.
Let's go ahead and get to the fantasy.
Okay. Because we do have a lot of other stuff that's coming. Yeah.
I'm feeling good about fantasy. Should I be?
Yeah, you should feel all right about it.
All right.
Yeah.
I feel like I had some decent.
We both had double-digit movement this
week. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
That is definitely good.
In the positive direction, even. You improved 10 places to 51st. So you're nearly back onto page one. Just flirting with it at this point. I improved 13.
It's a long road back home.
It is a long road back home. I improved 13 places to 67, so I haven't quite caught back up with you, but I'm keeping that pressure on. James Thomas, 6 weeks in a row, top of the table. His Genius FC is sitting up there. Jay Slack falling all the way back to sixth place.
Come on.
Radcliffe. Someone that we've actually seen up in the higher reaches of the table before, his Nolito flow is now 40 points off James's Genius FC. So there is your fantasy update, which allows us to move into the real world of soccer, where there's actually been a boatload of it that's unfolded.
Since we got double dip.
Yeah. The beginning of the hectic holiday season.
Yeah. It's kind of weird with Christmas landing on a Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
It's backloaded, I guess, more.
Yeah.
Because once Boxing Day hits, like next week is going to be insane. There's so much soccer that it's good that we're not going to be around to talk to that.
Yeah. It's literally too much. Like, we would need to do like a 3-hour episode next weekend.
Because between next Monday and like the 3rd or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a million matches.
Wait, so are they doing games on Saturday or Sunday at all?
This weekend?
Yeah.
No.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Yeah. Unfortunately, no. I know in the past couple of years, because of where Christmas would land, we would get like the weekend games, and then like a couple days later, we'd have Boxing Day.
Mm-hmm.
This year is not the case.
No. No, it's they're actually taking that weekend off. So we're not going to get quite as much crammed into that weekend space, but the subsequent week is going to be delicious.
They are literally taking this weekend off because I saw Thibaut Courtois was he's in the States right now, just taking it at like an NFL game,
relaxing.
Instagrammed at like a Sixers game, I think.
Probably flew over on one of those wicked, you know, Emirates airline like little pods you get to sleep in.
And I forget. I think we're Delta. We're Delta folks at Chelsea.
Yeah.
So whatever Delta hooks them up with.
I'm sure there's probably something phenomenal we're unaware of.
The two of us will never have.
With it being the crazy January schedule that everyone likes to complain about is, you know, the big thing with English soccer. They wear themselves out in this time period.
Yeah.
Good teams run into trouble during this. One of the good teams that always struggles with this time period, they're struggling again.
And we'll start right there. It was not a good week for Arsenal.
No, it wasn't. Two subsequent 2-1 losses.
But really, both with the same make and model.
Yeah.
Early leads
that
disintegrated in the second half.
Hmm. It's amazing how quick and hot and cold that Arsenal fans get to over these type of situations.
Arsenal fan TV was, I mean, should be up for an Emmy.
Yeah. If you're not a fan of Arsenal fan TV, you're either an Arsenal fan on your own. because you can't stand watching.
If I'm an Arsenal fan, there's no reason I watch that.
Yeah.
Because it's just pain. It's just more people just expressing the misery I already feel.
Yeah, exactly. But if you're not an Arsenal fan, it's glorious. It's glorious entertainment.
So good.
They have a couple regulars that are just unbelievable. So definitely give that a look. And it was fantastic this week as, like you said, Arsenal basically just repeating the same situation, looking good out of the gates, crumbling down the stretch, and giving away a match in the later portions of it. And it's just... It's like clockwork at this time of year that Arsenal run into these type of issues. They're bound to pick up an injury here.
What time is it? It's banger out.
Yeah. And then this skid will probably last until what? The end of January. They'll probably get knocked out by Bayern in the Champions League in early February.
Well, knowing my luck, they'll have it figured out by February when they play Chelsea again.
Mm. Only in the league though. They will already have bowed out of the Champions League at that point.
Probably. Yeah. Cause they got Bayern.
Yeah. But really just, It's funny almost how this just is a habit every year for Arsenal.
A lot of people are pointing to the Mustafi factor mm-hmm. that he was missing in action. Hurt, not playing in these matches, and you look at the matches, they did not go well.
Yeah, he's been a big portion of it silently. You know, they've been doing so well offensively. You haven't really had to hear much about their defensive woes this year, and it's because they've cleaned it up in the back.
Yeah. So they are 9 points off the lead.
That's a pretty sizable gap.
Is that, are we saying game over for title race?
No. No.
So they're not out of the title.
I at least learned my lesson last year in saying like, oh, the title race is over. Like,
I'm not saying the title race is over. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying the title race is over for them being 9 points out.
Ooh, Arsenal in general?
Yeah. I'm talking about Arsenal right now.
I'm not willing to throw them that far
out. Okay, 9 points out at Christmas. They're still in it.
Anything can happen in this league.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
We'll get back to that when we talk about United.
Okay.
They do have like an easy stretch, though. We talk about the big buildup.
Mm-hmm.
Things do get better for them.
Okay.
West Brom, Crystal Palace, and Bournemouth. That's their hectic holiday calendar for them.
Yeah. Those are winnable
games. What should be winnable matches. I mean, mm-hmm. West Brom might just, you know, they'll do their usual pack it in.
As we said, though,
has stifled people in the past.
They're quietly doing well there, West Brom.
Yeah.
So I'm not willing to concede that entirely at this point, but you could see Arsenal tilting that one.
Palace are a mess.
Yeah, they're just terrible.
Bournemouth, unless they pull off, you know, some kind of miracle like they did against Liverpool.
Yeah, and Jack Wilshere, who's been at the center of a lot of the things they've done well this season, can't play in this match.
That's like their other, you know, Nathan Ake has been so good for them. Mm-hmm. Chelsea play Bournemouth on Boxing Day. Not going to be
able to play. By the way, Ake scored again this weekend.
Yeah, my fantasy team is well aware of that.
Yes.
As he was on the bench. Let's move to greener pastures. Chelsea, United, Spurs. These are the three big teams in the hunt, if you will, that have shown their abilities.
Yeah.
And especially, let's start with United. Definitely a side who has looked to have found their feet.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, over the last couple matches, obviously, two wins, big wins in a row for them as far as just grinding out results.
Yeah, three in a row. And you know the big thing with it, if you look at their current form, all goes to the big man up top, Zlatan.
Mm-hmm.
7 goals in their last 6 league matches.
Mm-hmm.
He's had 10 goals in all competition over the past like month and a half.
Get the man the rock.
Yeah.
Seriously, what you need to do.
Yeah.
It's funny. It almost feels as if like United and Arsenal are two sides of the opposite or the same coin, right? Like you flip one and it lands right side up and the other one's doing terribly. You flip it the other way, and it's vice versa. When United seem to be doing well, Wenger and his side don't seem to be doing as well, at least this season anyway. So I'm really, really excited to see if this is something that Mourinho is going to be able to turn around long-term, or if this is just another one of those, man, there's really not that much in it.
So United playing well, Jose has calmed down. He's not freaking out, kicking stuff, getting sent off.
Sure.
Are all things well in United land?
I think we're seeing signs of it.
Okay.
It's not just United like pipping a result through like luck and Zlatan coming up with magic on his own. They're actually looking like structurally more sound.
They figured out what they need to be doing, I think, how they need to set up.
He's starting to figure out who his first team is and who he should actually be lining up in what position. So I want to say that this is looking like he's actually getting things figured out there, but only time's going to tell the truth.
Well,
there.
Let's talk about what they could – what their outlook is moving forward, because they are – playing well, but at the same time, they currently go into Christmas 13 points off the lead.
I mean, I don't know that we're talking about them like they're
in title contenders,
in a title race.
Top four contenders.
But I think top four. Okay. And I think that was the goal this year. I don't know that they were saying, like, hey, go win a title, although I think Lester probably made them think anyone could do that. But
sure.
At the same time, I think top four was the goal, and I think that's definitely what they're shooting for at the moment.
Let's go to the team that is at the top quickly. Chelsea, 6 points clear into Christmas. Boy, just had that Liverpool match today, ended just slightly different. We'd be talking 8 points clear.
Being nice
on Christmas.
Nice. That's, little cushion.
That would have been nice. Six points isn't anything to sniff at, though. Looking good.
Yeah, looking good. The weird thing is, though, they're not necessarily playing the best that they've played over the last couple matches.
In fact, the scoring has dried up.
Scoring has dried up. Costa just continues to grind out the goals. I think he's been MVP of the season so far,
and particularly the last few games. He's been the guy getting it done.
He's really just putting in all the effort that's necessary. I've been really, really impressed with him, especially given the letdown that last year was for him.
And with him getting a yellow card, he'll get some time off, so he won't have to worry about Monday's match.
I heard an interesting discussion this week. I can't remember what podcast it was on, about guys
doing this on purpose,
actively getting this so they can have Christmas off.
So, someone tweeted out in the middle of the match that if Pedro got put on late, that he would purposely go and just clear someone out and just get himself out of there, so that he can
a little holiday back to Spain.
Yeah.
But I do think Chelsea are really, these are the type of results that win you titles when you're not playing that well and you're actually getting a result when you're not in that type of spirit and form, I think is a true sign of a champion. So I think it's looking good for them.
Yeah. So 2-1-0 wins. Mentioned both Costa and Conte are going to be out of Monday's matches because of yellow cards, so they will enjoy a little extended holiday break.
I'd like to see them getting little handbags in in the director's box.
Yeah.
Like arguing over the last, little miniature hot dog or something.
I would not come between Diego Costa and a mini hot dog.
No.
Let's move to your boys. And, you talked about last week, you were a little worried that Harry Kane has not found his form, but that hasn't stopped the team from playing well this week.
No, they've not looked really bad outside of the Chelsea game where, they were probably the worst, side on the field for a majority of it.
Well, that broke a streak for them. They hadn't
unbeaten.
They hadn't lost at that point in the season.
Yeah, sure. But have been cracks, and I think the Harry Kane crack is the largest of them. And I think I even wrote this down. He still doesn't quite look on, isn't quite in sync with his teammates. Spurs on a whole still aren't quite clicking at that offensive final third of the field. But they are still playing well in just about every match, and they're dominating just about every match they play in. In both these matches, that was the case. But both of them proved tricky, and it took Spurs a little bit of time to actually work their way through them. But I do think they're starting to figure it out a little bit. I'm hoping, and I think we're starting to see signs of Kane actually finding his form again, and hopefully the goals will follow shortly after.
All right, let's quickly whip around. We kind of try to condense this here, as we did have essentially two match days to work with. Let's start with Everton. We mentioned the Merseyside derby. We'll mention both those teams, Everton and Liverpool, squaring off today. Liverpool in a very just poorly, just not a very watchable game. I mean, no. just a bad start-stop game that had no momentum at all. The final breaths of this match, get the goal from Mane. So Liverpool get this win over Everton. Everton, though, the week started a lot better for them. They were the ones that got that win, grinded out a really crucial victory over Arsenal.
That's right.
That proved, I mean, this was a team that we were really starting to wonder about. And I think obviously the Liverpool loss hurts, giving that matchup there in the last minutes, but getting that win, against a team like Arsenal, in the midweek, that was huge, probably just for their general, psyche, you'd have to think.
Yeah. And it shows what they're capable of, but I think Everton need to find some sort of consistency here. If anything is going to happen, let alone save the manager's job. On the Liverpool side of things, they're another side that have kind of hit a little bit of a rough patch. They had that 1-0 win of Everton, but it was certainly not their most sexy performance. Uh-huh. And then earlier in the week, they did win over Borough, but we're not necessarily seeing like the Liverpool of like full domination running and everyone tearing people to shreds. And I would imagine a few Liverpool fans are going to come away from that feeling a little lucky that they actually came away from that derby match with all 3 points.
Yeah. Their stretch coming up looks fairly easy. They'll play on, on Boxing Day. They actually don't play on Boxing Day. They're one of the few teams that will not have a match on Boxing Day. They'll play on the 28th. They will play... Stoke on the 27th, because they played Monday, they don't have to go back to back Mondays. And then they have on New Year's Eve, they have City.
That will be a wonderful New Year's Eve match.
Now, they've had some big wins over City in the past.
That's right.
In the past year or so.
Yeah, they've actually been a team that City have struggled with. So I think it's going to be an excellent opportunity to see where Guardiola's men are at that point, as well as where Klopp is with his second year development.
And then the following, Monday, they play Sunderland. So not a horrific gauntlet for them. I mean, that City match will be the key one there. And obviously, if they manage to throw away one of the easier ones of the other two.
Yeah. Speaking of City, let's talk about what they pulled off during this break.
Yeah.
Winning
of matches.
Yeah. Both matches they pulled down. 2-0 win over Watford. And then the aforementioned 2-1 win over top of Arsenal. City, I don't know, everyone's kind of talking about how, you know, Guardiola's not this world beater anymore. Maybe he's being found out. Look, guys, this is a side that's inconsistent because he's literally remaking the way they play. And even for world-class players like the ones at City, it takes a bit of time.
What? We're almost in January. What could January look like for City? Could they be big spenders?
I wouldn't be shocked. But also wouldn't be shocked if it was only one or two big additions. Maybe a few departures, more likely.
So more just shedding dead weight and bringing in one or two big pieces, key pieces.
Potentially so. So allows them to keep pace with Chelsea up at the top of the league. Another side that actually pulled off two wins in this stretch is one that's found it tough to find wins in general this year. West Ham getting a 1-0 win over Burnley in the midweek before proceeding to get a 1-0 win over Hull.
Wow, it's two juggernauts they faced.
But hey, both were at home. That's the more important thing.
That is, because they were struggling at home.
That's a place where they really, really struggled.
A pox on their house.
Yeah, that's right. Burrow, both matches they were involved with this week were 3-0s. They were on the opposite sides of those 3-0s. The aforementioned 3-0 loss to Liverpool at home, made up for by burying Bob Bradley's boys 3-0 at home themselves.
Oh, boy. We need to talk about this here. Bob Bradley.
He's on shaky ground.
Shaky ground is being nice.
Yeah. They are definitely doing worse than they did before they fired Francisco Guidolin.
I saw a lot of people tweeting out about this. And we knew this was going to happen. He's not getting a fair shake. Now, granted, he's not playing well. But apparently... there are some people that are his detractors are bringing up the fact that, like, he says game instead of match.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I have a whole rant about this later.
Field instead of pitch.
I have a whole thing for this.
So all right.
Let's just shelve it for a minute.
Okay, we'll shelve that.
Yeah.
I just – you almost knew that was coming.
You
knew that was coming, right?
Yeah, without a doubt.
You knew that once things went south, it was going to be about – hey, this guy's American. He has no idea what he's doing.
And they've pretty much only gone south for Swansea on that front. That 3-1 loss to West Brom. And then, of course, they had another one at the weekend where they lost 3-0 to Burrow. Six goals this week. even after the 4-3 barn burner win that they had last week. That was just a little too much, and you want to see him get to January. You really do, but it's dire straits.
Does he get a window?
Yeah.
Does he get a window? Other teams to mention, I guess we should probably mention the league leaders. It's not been great for them. They had a up and down. They lost 1-0 to Bournemouth last Tuesday.
Yep.
Did Leicester City, and then able to...
Scrap a 2-2 draw.
Yeah, scrap a 2-2. This was an amazing match, actually.
It was great from a highlight perspective.
Jamie Vardy goes out on a red card.
Yep.
It wasn't a red for me. It was a two-footed challenge, but he didn't... I mean, he got the ball.
He did get the ball.
He definitely got the ball.
He lunged in the air with 2 feet pointed towards the defender.
I know, but I feel like he did it from a far enough distance that by the time that he ended up making contact with a player, like, if he was trying to be malicious about it, like, probably should have jumped a few seconds later.
Yeah, probably so.
Like, if you were actually trying to take that guy out, you don't jump as early as he did.
Yeah, probably. Probably. But it's Jamie Vardy.
But yeah, so a mixed bag of a week for them.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is where we stand. I don't know if there's any other games you want to really mention. I know you're big on that Sunderland-Watford 1-0 affair.
Yeah, all I have to say about Watford losing both their games in this, definitely because of the behind the patch, or behind the crest thing that's
what
going
was
on right
the,
now.
It's
the kiss of death right now.
Well, yeah, because it was Crystal Palace last year that did
Crystal Palace.
It wasn't behind, it was not, I don't think it was called that, but it was like the same thing, right?
Yeah, same idea. So if NBC comes knocking your club to do a mini-series of some sort on them, just say no, we're good. We don't need it. Unless it's Ted Lasso.
So bottom of the table, since you mentioned some of the people fighting for it, we mentioned Sunderland. They did get a win, but it is Sunderland, Swansea, and then at the bottom 20th place, actually tied with Swansea, so goal differential of a factor of 5 that is the difference there. Hull City in 20th.
Yeah.
So those are the three... And yeah, I guess you can't be surprised about any of this.
No, not at all. Not the way any.
I mean,
of them
talking about okay, so Swansea, you've already had to make a managerial change.
Mm-hmm.
Sunderland, you are Sunderland.
Yep.
And Hull City started the season off with like 5 dudes.
Yeah, barely enough.
Like they barely
actually
had enough
guys. 11. So yeah, I think that's exactly working out where we'd expect it to be. So that gets us to the end of this double week action of the Premier League. Of course, we will wait till the day after New Year, or excuse me, after Christmas, to actually get another round in. So ask for delicious things for the Santa Man to bring to you, put under your Christmas tree, hopefully soccer related.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we want to get to our question, by the way?
I think this is a good time to do that.
We threw that out. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the window is right around the corner, and it is Christmas, and Hanukkah starts on, I believe, the 24th.
That's right.
So it is holiday time to pass out gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was what we asked. We asked, what would you want Santa or whomever to present as a gift to your club this year?
Yes, we got a lot of different responses here. You know, we saw some people take this pretty seriously, others not so seriously. That's
okay
to be expected.
Sure.
Our longtime submitter, Gage Magoto, he says, needs Santa to bring them Columbus Crew a center back. He really wants Omar Gonzalez, a left back, Greg Garza, and Higuain replacement, Rooney. So shooting for the stars.
Now, Garza, actually, they do own the rights to Garza.
So maybe.
They actually have the MLS rights for Garza. It sounds like they don't plan on keeping him. If he does want to come to MLS, they plan on shopping those rights, but
fair enough.
Yeah they do actually have this. So
on the domestic front, if we're going to stay there, your buddy Eddie Hooper from Dynamo Ed, he asks for the Red Devils to make it to the top 4. That's not domestic, but he did say Dayton Dynamo FC to grow as a club, Gem City Squadron to grow in number and in sound and voice. So
well, you're going to have your own beer this year, so
it's fuel for that.
There
sound.
You go.
That's right. Josh Babcock, he offered up someone for Lukaku to play off of so he's not on an island by himself for 90 minutes. Great.
Say most of the Toffee faithful are echoing that one.
Yeah. Jono likes Bono. He offers getting rid of Fellaini. I'm assuming he's a United fan. We saw some clapping there.
Fan of Fellaini time.
Yeah. Jordan Cooper offers up a clue. I'm not sure who he supports. I know he supports Louisville City, so I'm just going to apply that to them.
I feel like they have a clue. They're a very well-run organization.
Yeah, normally. Jakarta Casual asks for a P45 for Wenger, pretty much your pink slip.
Yeah, that's. I had to look that up. I was like, is that what I think it is?
Yeah.
Yes, it is.
It's exactly what it is. It's a pink slip. And we saw Matt Morris. He offered up for West Ham's Boiling Ground to come back after this week. Don't really need it.
Hey, the curse is over.
Two wins.
You've actually been able to win.
Two wins in for Werder Bremen, more U.S. coverage. So.
Yeah.
I suppose that could be the case.
I don't know. Everything's, I mean, the Red Bull club is kind of stealing the thunder.
They are stealing the thunder.
German Leicester.
That's right. So there wasn't a whole lot of domestic stuff.
Right. NASL, we have no idea still what's happening there. You know,
that's definitely up in the air, although we will talk a little bit about that here shortly. Also, all the domestic competitions are all wrapped up.
Right.
So
starting to get into the player movement period of the offseason, mm-hmm. I guess.
There was some MLS expansion stuff. Again, we're going to table that for just a couple minutes. We're going to get into that here shortly. Uh-huh. The Gold Cup was announced today. The locations
and
stuff for the Gold Cup. 13 editions in a row here in the United States. Some people think that's a bad thing. Some people think that's a good thing. Your thoughts? It's good,
if
bad.
It's good or bad.
Would you like to see it somewhere else?
I mean, it might as well be somewhere else because I'm such a schmuck that even the fact that it's in my own state this year, I'm still probably not going to go.
Even on a press pass? Get a press pass to that match?
Hold on now.
Yeah?
Things are changing.
Yeah,
maybe so. I don't know. Yeah. I want to go to a match. I don't know.
The U.S. locations were announced. That was the key bit of this announcement. What we ended up seeing, of course, Cleveland, what you alluded to a moment ago, they will be hosting a U.S. match. It's exciting.
That's huge.
Nashville, also in the Midwest. Holy crap, they're getting a U.S. match too?
Yeah, I didn't realize that actually when I was looking it up. If you're bored mm-hmm. this week and you want to avoid family, I went ahead and kind of went through all the MLS expansion prospects and was just kind of tweeting out just kind of the general facts of where they stand on the three main points that MLS wants.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize that how great the international attendance numbers in Nashville have been over the past year. I mean, they've had, and including matches that didn't even have the U.S. playing in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had an El Tri match that had 40,000.
Yeah.
Their U.S. matches have been over 40,000 also.
Mm-hmm. So definitely showing support there. You get why they're in that expansion talk.
Well, and plus it's like even if you don't live in Nashville, like if you live anywhere within like 5 or 6 hours of Nashville, like
mm-hmm.
A, it's a sweet city. So like just going, making that part of your trip,
yep,
awesome.
Yep.
Like it's just a good like
it's
destination
It's a great, spot. Great town. Actually, most of the major cities in Tennessee are worth a visit to. Memphis, also a really, really cool town to take a visit into. But
Knoxville, terrible.
Yeah, it's got its plus.
Knoxville's all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'll just go to the Zaxby's and then leave out. Yeah.
There are other places you can go for Zaxby's, luckily.
There is.
The third location U.S. will be playing in the group stage is Tampa. Interesting that two of those cities are MLS expansion cities, potentially. Maybe testing things out. Potentially.
MLS kind of tip their hands that that's what they do.
The other thing that I like about this, though, when we're just taking that whole conversation out of the perspective here, this regionalizes the tournament a little bit more. As far as the U.S. goes, they're not going to be bouncing all over the entire freaking country, which is a little backwards of how they typically do things here for tournaments. So maybe a sign of logic creeping its way into international federation. Just
That'd
a little
a
bit.
Along with our domestic, we do have a guest we want to bring on tonight.
That's right.
To talk a little bit about one of the expansion teams that is ready to make its debut. All right, joining us right now on the podcast, it is our Christmas episode, so I guess we need to go up north and talk to our good friend Bruce McGuire, Du Nord on Twitter. Obviously, soccer exploding there. Mm-hmm. In many ways, up in the Twin Cities, up in Minnesota. So, Bruce, thanks for popping on with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks for having me.
So, anytime we have someone on, we always got to start with the big question: How did you and soccer come together? How did soccer become a love of yours?
I guess the easiest way is to say somebody kind of brought it to me. I was about 10 or 11, maybe 11 years old, and we had some new people move into the neighborhood, and the husband was German, and there was no soccer teams in our neighborhood at all, and so he started one. And I don't think the day before I met him and the day before I kicked a soccer ball, I don't think I had ever heard the word soccer or knew a single thing about it. Nothing. I mean, I played basketball. I played football. I loved basketball and I was pretty good. I hated football and I was really good. And then soccer just, it literally was, the ball was set in front of my feet and I kicked it and I said, oh, I like this. So it was that simple. And I was really lucky a year or two later that the Minnesota Kicks of the old NASL were born and I got to go see them play, and they had a great team and the atmosphere was good and they had a lot of big wins with some really cool, interesting players. And that pretty much solidified it for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're not the first person to talk to us before about how an NASL team kind of sowed their roots in the sport to an extent. People often forget that Minnesota kind of has that long-running history. You hear about all these different NASL teams, but you don't often hear about the Kicks.
Well, and, you know, they were a team for maybe 5 years, and they had a handful of the best players in the history of the NASL. Alan Willey is still the leading goal scorer in the history of the NASL, and he lives here in Minnesota, and he does color commentary in the last 3 years for Minnesota United, which is really cool to get to meet him after, you know, being 13, 14, 12 years old, and he was the star striker on the team. And then later in my life, I get to meet the guy. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I can.
And they also had a player named Ace Nestalengwe from South Africa, and he was the guy that made it all, you know, seem possible to me, or not possible, but he's the one who showed me that this was something special. And he was one of those guys that came up through the apartheid era, so he never played on the world stage. Very few people know him, but he was extraordinary. And I was a defender as a kid until I saw him play. And he was one of those midfielders that would shoot from 30, 35 yards out. And I'm like, oh my God, I have to do this. Absolutely. And it was the best, you know? It was so cool to watch a guy like that. And I just, the next day at practice, I just started shooting from everywhere.
I guess, you know, we look at now and where soccer has come to, from the Kicks all the way now to Minnesota United getting on the cusp of joining MLS, that first MLS season right around the corner. Kind of take us through, you know, as a fan, as someone who covers soccer in the area, just what has been the last 5 years or so for the game of soccer in the Twin Cities?
I think it's run the full gamut from 2011, our team won the NASL championship with basically no ownership. They were controlled and run by the Sports Center, which is where they've played for most of their 27 years. But that was on a shoestring budget, and it definitely was not something that was the future of the team. And the next year they played in 2012 with no owner, the league paying the bills, basically the other owners paying the bills, and they lost the final in penalty kicks. They should have won it in the last few minutes of the game, and they gave up a really stupid goal that let Tampa tie it, and it went to penalty kicks, and they lost in penalties. And at that point, the team had no ownership and no future, and it looked pretty dire, and somebody with an extraordinary amount of money stepped in at that point and really put the team on the solid ground that it's on these days. So it's definitely been the full gamut of possibilities and emotions and obviously finances in the last 5 years. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, I mean, the turnaround's been pretty stark. There were a lot of, I don't want to say a lot of times, but there were several times throughout the course of the last 5 years where there was a genuine concern that there wouldn't be a club in Minnesota anymore.
I mean, for me, it happened for about 10 years in a row. from the early 2000s into almost the mid 2010s, 20-teens, whatever they're called. Almost every year the offseason would come and you'd be like, oh my God, is this team going to make it again? And it, you know, it went from year to year to year, and there was a lot of giant question marks. And there was one year where the season ended without any of the players or coaches or vendors or anybody getting paid, and the owner skipping town didn't even have the guts to file bankruptcy. He just bailed. And that was really desperate times. So to have someone show up at a game one time out of the blue, I mean, there was somebody out there leading the charge trying to find an owner, but to look across the field and see somebody that I recognized as one of the wealthiest people in Minnesota at the game, what was a crazy feeling. And I went out of my way to try and track him down over the next 24 hours and finally got connected to his group and met with one of the people there and told them how important it was to keep this thing alive.
And that, I would presume, was Dr. Bill McGuire.
Exactly. And the irony has always been, I have a brother named Bill McGuire, and our family has joked for decades that, you know, my brother's a secret billionaire and all these stupid things. And so connecting with them, meeting with them, talking with them, you know, I made sure that they knew our family jokes, which Dr. Bill McGuire is not amused by, but his wife finds hysterical. So
hey, at least
it's pretty good.
You got an in with at least one of them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So it gets announced that MLS is coming. There was that press conference there with, Landon Donovan, Twillman was there. So odd bunch of people at this press conference, but then it all came down to, yeah, to have a stadium. I know that unlike, fortunately, the Miami situation, there became a conclusion and a solution to this stadium thing, but it wasn't exactly a super easy road to get this stadium done in the Twin Cities.
It was only a matter of time, though, because there was three really good options. And from the day that they bought the team and renamed it Minnesota United, their intention was to build a stadium. It didn't matter what league they were going to play in or anything. So they were immediately looking for locations. The location that they ultimately settled on is one of the first that they looked at. They had another option that was in a south suburb called Bloomington, which is where the Mall of America is, which is one of those giant destination malls, and with a light rail line on it, and there's a nice piece of property there. And then there was a piece of property that they actually got a lease on in downtown Minneapolis. And that one ended up falling apart because the mayor and a few of the other city officials just wouldn't back the program, even though the ownership had come out and said, we're going to pay for the whole thing ourselves. The city of Minneapolis, I think, was just at a tipping point of, we're not going to, you know, have this go through our political system again, after they had just done it for the Minnesota Twins Stadium and the Minnesota Viking Stadium, which both cost the taxpayers probably $1 billion combined. And here's someone who comes forth and says, I'm going to pay for it all myself. And that's the one they balk at.
Right.
Very odd. Very odd.
Yeah, it seemed like it was pretty close to happening there for a while. And then obviously the team settles on the site that you mentioned a minute ago, which is in St. Paul. And that was actually a question that I have. It's curious, here in Cincinnati, and I, you know, full disclosure, I work for the club. But at the same time, you know, the idea that we would need to build a stadium. And here in Cincinnati, we have the Cincinnati side of the river. And then there's Northern Kentucky, which is, for all intents and purposes, Cincinnati. I mean, it's
where the airport is.
Yeah, it's right. And people.
Yeah, I've driven across a couple of bridges.
Yeah, that's right.
Between the two, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And people, for whatever reason, if we were to have to build a stadium on that side of the river, there's kind of like a stigma that comes with that. And I was curious, does that kind of stigma exist in the Minneapolis-St. Paul area? Like, oh, it's St. Paul. Like, it's a shame that they didn't pull it off in Minneapolis. That kind of feeling.
There is and there isn't. The hockey team plays in downtown St. Paul, And they're as big as anything here. Hockey is enormous in the state of Minnesota. So that gives St. Paul some legitimacy. But there is a feeling that at 5 o'clock, you know, St. Paul rolls up the sidewalks and everyone goes home, where Minneapolis is a proper city. But the location that it's at, the area is called Midway. And that's because it's literally halfway between downtown Minneapolis and downtown St. Paul. So it's almost like it's in both cities. It's very close to the border between the two cities. And so, yeah, there's a little bit of stigma, but it's on a major freeway. It's at probably the biggest intersection in all of St. Paul. So it doesn't really have an out-of-the-way vibe to it at all. And if you drew a map, or I mean a circle around the map of the Twin Cities, it's almost dead center in the middle of it all.
Interesting.
So there you go, DJ. Just FC Cincinnati needs to build the stadium on the river.
Just right on the river.
Just a giant barge.
All right. All right.
That'd be fantastic. I mean, I love that kind of stuff.
Yeah. We'll see if we can make it happen.
So obviously
Yeah.
We're now in that point where the team is being built. Obviously, you guys now have a head coach. Everything's tracking towards year one and building that up. What's been the vibe as far as how that team has been coming together?
I want to say one last quick thing about the stadium.
Absolutely, go for it.
When they talked about Minneapolis and the mayor came out immediately and said no, there was an internal memo that went around through the city of St. Paul government that was later through, you know, the Freedom of Information Act.
Oh, I think I remember this.
Was grabbed by the press. And it literally was a note from somebody to the mayor of St. Paul saying, what would you think about trying to get Minnesota United to build their stadium here? And all the reply said was, hell yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that.
I mean, that's the difference between the two. One said, absolutely no chance, and the other said, hell yeah. And even though I'm from Minneapolis, I want the stadium here so bad. When somebody across town says, hell yeah, you're in.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't start dickering then. You're just like, yes, we're in. Let's go. and that kind of energy can create so many other things too. You know, that positivity and not just positivity, but excitement and it gives that idea that this is a real thing and it's wanted. It's not, you know, the stuff that we grew up with people saying that soccer was a second league, you know, second tier sport and all those things. This is another one of those steps that makes it very legitimate. And you're right, when you start putting things together like building a roster, hiring coaches, hiring technical directors, you know, bringing all those things on board, the team has a real legitimacy now at this point. Even though they've played 27 seasons, things in the last since I think the NASL season for Minnesota ended around Halloween, it's not very long ago. It's not even 2 months ago, but everything has changed into a completely different gear.
Yeah, absolutely. I know this is a burning question in Jeremy's mind as far as players that people would ultimately like to see end up back
in
Minnesota. And it seems like it's on, and the wheels are set in motion for this.
Get my scarf out.
Yeah, that's right. Jeremy, proud possessor of a Miguel Ibarra scarf. what do you think the likelihood of that going through is, and how big of a moment would that be for the club?
It's a great question that I pondered for a long time. When they sold him, I thought it was the perfect time because he had outgrown the team and he needed a bigger challenge. And they got real money for him, which was really cool for a second division team. And, you know, imagine if Cincinnati sold a player for $1.5 million, what that would do for the club.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a huge thing, budget, you know? Right. Exactly. It's a huge thing. And the fact that we're a year and a half later talking about him potentially coming back here is a double-edged sword. One, he's beloved here. So that's a great thing. But the downside is that means that he didn't succeed where he went. And he's a player that plays on a lot of self-confidence. And I think that's waning for him right now. So if he comes back to Minnesota, they're going to have to spend a fair amount of time building that confidence back up. And I'm sure in his mind, he's going to have a lot of question marks. But, you know, he's he's a special guy. He's very quiet. He lets his actions speak on the field, and when he gets his confidence up, he's like a demon possessed on the field. He, even though he's a big time Christian, he's still a demon, you know.
What about some of the rest of the roster kind of starting to shape up? What do you think as far as, you know, you mentioned, you know, obviously getting a bar back would just be huge for the fan base. You know, looking at that roster, do they need to also go out and splash and get like a big DP? You know, I mean, would that matter? Is that important?
From a marketing standpoint, the way I think about it, yes, I think it would make a difference. But from everything that the club has said, and believe me, they haven't said much. They are a very, very, very tight-lipped bunch of people. Everything that they have said indicates they have no interest in going that direction. Everything that they have said indicates that they want to find special, young, attack-minded players that are not going to sell tickets on their name alone, but they will make this team great in the long run. So you know, they've got a two-year window here where they're going to play in a rented stadium before their stadium is finished. And I think they may be taking the approach that we're going to take 2 years to build this team, and in the third year is when we're going to spring the trap. I don't know that for a fact. It's just the way it feels to me.
Hmm. So, obviously, you guys are heading to MLS, but you are leaving a league that can't stay out of the headlines and the rumor mill and the Twitter sphere of what on earth is going on with the NASL. You obviously probably fairly connected with people within that league. What is the vibe you're getting now as we kind of are no longer in the realm of the league is totally dead, and we kind of – I don't know what is going on now with the NASL.
I don't think anybody does, but when they said we'll have a firm decision in 7 to 10 days, and I saw today that that was 13 days ago, I think that kind of tells you all you need. I think that the NASL is a very much of a needed league, and I don't mean maybe the NASL itself, but this kind of slightly outsider, we're going to poke some people, we're going to cause a little trouble, we're going to stir up things kind of league. I think that stuff's always important because they keep asking questions that sometimes maybe the rest of us don't want to ask. And so I find it as a necessary, but if they can't run a good business and keep a solid plan and stick to it, then what's the point?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's what we were kind of, you know, we had mentioned this in the past, like, you know, we lament the fact that there are fan bases that may no longer have teams, but at the end of the day, this sport doesn't grow by bad business.
No, and we've seen so much bad business, it's insane. When Minnesota left the old version of the USL, which luckily your team did not walk into.
Yeah.
In the prior 13 years, from 2010 back to 1997, the league went through 75 teams.
Which is,
I mean, that's insane. A joke, yeah. You know?
Yeah,
that's not a league.
No,
that's some bizarre. I don't even know what it is.
Yeah, and you were seeing teams in odd places that would.
There was
crop
that whole
up,
Caribbean. Like, yeah, there's like three teams down there.
Antigua Barracuda, and you know the Puerto Rico Islanders, several incarnations of those. And you're right. I think it's an interesting take to hear what NASL offers, and as we reach this kind of crux where maybe it folds back into the USL after taking several years away, we've reached like a point where US soccer maybe needs something that's going to do something like that. And I've never necessarily thought about it in that angle before.
I mean, I think that all the things can coexist. It's a matter of people wanting to coexist, and none of the owners who split off from the old USL to form the NASL, none of them are still around. None of them are part of the modern NASL. And I think that's a big problem right there. I think it's what leaves them in a big question mark when they decide how and why they're going to do business. And you can't run anything that way. It just doesn't work we don't even talk the long haul. Even in the short haul, that doesn't work.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's talk quickly, shift gears. Before we let you go, we've had big news over the tail end of last week where Don Garber and Major League Soccer held a press conference basically outlining what expansion is going to look like potentially over the next, 5 to 10 years. And we've seen all these kind of different cities that have popped up, some of which you're familiar with in an ASL market, some of which that are USL markets.
Are you familiar with any of those markets, DJ?
I may be familiar with one of those markets.
Really? Okay.
More so than others. but wanted to kind of get your take on you know, a market that's recently joined the league that's had to go through this process. What are your thoughts about the timeline that was outlaid and the cities that are actually trying to participate?
It's really hard to know what's inside the groups that want to own these teams. And that's the key to everything. You can have an energy in a city like they had in Sacramento and like what we've seen in Cincinnati, where some of us feels like it came out of nowhere. And it's thrilling and it's incredible. Do the people who are behind the curtain have the financial wherewithal to really, truly make this happen? When I look at Minnesota right now, from leaving NASL to joining MLS to building a stadium to put a real team on the field to build a feeder system, I think that they're going to spend $350 million to do that. And that's without kicking the ball. And that's where you have to be really serious about, do these people have the real wherewithal to make that happen? Minnesota has gone a route where they've brought in 6 or 7 investors now behind the scenes, and none of them are taking an active role that are being talked about in the public, but they're all the biggest name families in Minnesota. They're all billionaire families, and they're all putting in their piece of the puzzle so that none of them are laying out too much so that it would be a burden on them. And I think that's the real key. I would love to see every one of these new owners say, we're going to put up the money ourselves to build the stadium. We don't need the city. We don't need the state. We're putting up the money. That's what I would love to see. But, you know, most of the time that doesn't happen. I know we're in a very rare spot here.
Well, yeah. I think, you know, much like what you were talking about with the city of Minnesota, speaking from experience here in Cincinnati, we've also been burned by a couple stadium deals. And there is like this public resistance to actually using public money now. Not that it's a bad thing that necessarily, you know, in the past maybe it worked, but now there's a clear kind of leaning that people aren't going to want to rely on that public assistance. And it's always interesting to hear, you know, the success that people are actually having with these kind of more private models now.
And that's the test. We won't know how successful that is for another 15 to 20 years. We've watched a few of the people, and it's subtle. You really have to pay attention to notice these little things. But like down in Houston, they paid for their own stadium. In Kansas City, they didn't completely pay for it, but they put up a large amount for it. And if you watch really closely, you see after, you know, 4 or 5 years now, they're starting to cut a few corners. They're not putting quite as much money into the groundskeeping. They're not putting quite as much money into all those little flashy amenities that they started with 4 or 5 years ago, because it's really, really, really expensive to run these places. And to have enough events in there to pay all the bills on a regular basis is a huge challenge. And so that's what, you know, when MLS says that they want to see these people have a plan for all these things in place before they're going to go forward, I think that's a great thing, because if a couple of these people can put together a real plan, then we know that they're legit, and that's who you want to be in business with.
Well, Bruce, we hope you have a great holiday. We thank you for joining us. You can follow him at DoNord on Twitter. Check him out. Great insight on the game of soccer up in the great state of Minnesota and the Twin City areas. Thanks for coming on.
It was a blast. You're welcome, and thanks for having me.
Going to try to maybe hopefully cross paths with him while I believe we're both going to be spending Christmas in Milwaukee. So
you and Bruce, not
me and Bruce. Right here, this is us crossing paths for the week.
Yeah, this is
not happening again.
Getting that normal thing in. So that brings us towards the end of the podcast. And of course, where we need to go before we say goodbye to you for 2016.
Wowzers. That just hit.
Yeah. Hit home real fast. Makes you feel old almost. What's winners and wankers one last time this year?
My winner, and really just a fabulous winner. I mean, this has been a really enjoyable thing to see. We mentioned the MLS expansion, and one of the teams vying for MLS expansion is the newly rebranded North Carolina FC.
Okay.
They have struck up, yeah, I put in my notes a bromance, but I mean, it's social media, so it could easily be two women that run these accounts. So, I don't want to be sexist. But a friendship, due to hijacking of hashtags,
yeah,
has formed between them and Norwich City.
Yeah.
They have been, first it was Norwich just kind of going like, hey, we kind of need to talk about this whole fact that you guys are taking our hashtag.
Yeah.
And then, to their credit, North Carolina FC then put out a fake third kit on their social media that was basically just a Norwich kit.
Yeah, exactly.
And Norwich basically replied with taking the North Carolina FC kit and, or the FC logo and changing it to yellow Norwich colors.
And green. Yeah, it was a fantastic exchange.
I mean, such a cool thing. Mm-hmm. So yeah, super awesome to see, fun, enjoyable, likable.
If they don't host a friendly with Norwich this year,
that's gonna be
just
good.
A massive miss.
I know our boy Charlie would love to see it.
Just a massive miss. Yeah, I thought it was a great one. My winner, much more shallow.
Okay.
My winner is...
It is the holiday season. It's time to be shallow.
That's right. Someone who should be buying all of us a gift for Christmas now that he can afford to do so, Carlos Tevez. Hitting the payday one last time before he bows out into the sunset, leaving his hometown club of Boca Juniors, who he supposedly was returning home to retire at.
Right.
He's leaving to play for China's Shanghai Shenhua to become the world's richest player at $763,000 a week.
You know who their manager is, right?
Oh, yeah.
Our favorite manager of all time. Someone that has plummeted both of our clubs.
That's right.
ABB.
Oh, man.
Apparently, he's also in on possibly either and or John Terry and or Oscar.
Oh, man. Let me say, if I were picking between the two of those, from a pure footballing standpoint, there's literally only one of them I would pick.
I don't know, but from a pure comedy standpoint, John Terry hanging out in Asia?
Oh, my God.
Whoa. Hopefully they take away his social media.
or at bare minimum, follow him around with a camera.
Oh, my goodness.
Could you imagine John Terry, like enormous John Terry compared to a bunch of Asian players?
We've mentioned this before. I've met John Terry in person. I've never been blown away more by a player's stature that I did not see him being a large man.
Imagine him just pummeling someone with a tackle.
Yeah.
Like he could literally take out
kill some dudes.
Half a Chinese stadium with one tackle. Structural integrity be damned. That would be awesome.
Yeah.
But yeah, cheers to Carlos Tevez, 32 years old. Did score a goal on his final match with Boca, which is at least a little poetic. But hey, happy trails. Buy me a Christmas
He's had
present.
A very interesting career.
Oh my gosh. He is a textbook example of what third-party ownership does for a player's long-term prospects.
I mean, I feel like just yesterday he was at West Ham.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah.
Remember that was a thing?
Literally got Sheffield United relegated.
Yeah, that happened.
Probably should not have been, and his West Ham side probably should have gone down. Then he was, like, mysteriously sold off to Manchester United on a loan.
Yeah.
And then they sold him to Manchester City. And then he
always happens. Those two really like selling players to each other.
Yeah, it's something they
that
love.
That just tells you how unique his career is, that Manchester clubs are going to
sell
between each other to this guy.
It's almost like, here, buy my disease.
Yes.
Then he went to Juventus before ultimately landing.
Now going to China.
Yeah, now he's up to China.
Talk about Manchester buying diseases.
Yeah.
Much like here in the U.S., China is buying someone else's debt now.
That's right. How about your wanker?
My wanker. I don't know if you saw. So Zlatan has been scoring some goals.
Mm-hmm.
And he there's a picture that was him and I believe it was Jesse Lindegaard kind of celebrating. His Zlatan's like in the air. Lindegaard's for some reason wincing because, you know, that's what you're supposed to do when your teammate celebrates.
That's right.
So United players or United fans saw this and thought, hey, we need to make some cool memes. Hilarious memes.
Everyone needs them.
One such meme, though, struck me as just a bit tone deaf and out of touch with current reality.
Okay.
Where it showed Lindegaard holding a giant waste paper basket with City, Chelsea, and Arsenal already in the basket. And then Zlatan basically just Jordan style shooter, jumper of Liverpool's logo. Now, any other season, hey, all good and well. Unfortunately, those are four teams that you have in the league zero wins against.
Yeah.
In fact, you've lost against most of
them. I feel uncomfortable about this story.
Why would that make sense?
I don't need it. I don't.
Like, why would that make sense to me? Why don't you put a picture of, like, you know, the logos you should be in there and be like, hey, West Brom. Sorry, Tottenham. Like, at least teams you've actually won matches against this year.
A fair point. My wanker. I said earlier that I had a rant prepared. It's not really a huge rant. It's just English media.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to introduce you to a concept. Synonyms.
Uh-oh.
Pitch.
Okay.
Field. They mean the same thing.
Yeah.
Game.
Match.
Yeah, those are the same thing too. Substitutes. Yeah, those are normal. That's fine.
Argle bargle.
Yeah, that's a common one. Practice. He's not actually even said practice.
It's like he has said practice?
No, he's not. He's not
what
even
said What do they want
it.
Him? They want him to say
they
practice?
They would rather him say training.
Training.
He called it a PK once. Everyone lost their minds over him
instead
calling it a PK.
Not calling it pens.
My God, what's a penalty kick or just a penalty? Schedule instead of fixtures. That was one. He has said field a bunch. That really bothers people. Fans instead of supporters. Depending on who you're talking to, those are very different things. This whole argument is just unbelievable to me that they're going to use the words that he's using to talk about a game that literally mean the exact same thing based on the vernacular where he came from. Why is this a thing? Like, seriously, why is this a thing?
Can I throw a counterpoint out there?
Yeah.
Because they're losing?
Yeah.
I first saw this, I was like, absolutely, this is bullcrap. But then I thought about it a little more. Let's just say, for instance, that like a British guy became like an NBA head coach.
Sure.
And he was saying words that just didn't make sense. You know, he was talking about, you know, the guys are lacing up their boots. It's like, nah, dude, this is like sneakers, you know, whatever. And just using words. And while that was just completely innocuous and we didn't care, once the guy was proved himself to not be super competent at the gig as far as the fact that they were losing a lot, like, while that has literally nothing to do with if he's a good manager or not, or a good coach or not.
It makes it sound
worse. It just doesn't help. It's just not helping the situation.
Okay, I can see the point. I can totally see the point.
Like, we're going to excuse you saying, you know, a floor instead of a basketball court because you're winning. But if you start losing, like, that's just going to make me even more mad.
Yeah, people would live with the words he said if his team was actually winning. I hear your point. It does make it sound like he just
but
doesn't
it is
know what he's talking about.
Super petty.
Oh, my God. It's unbelievably petty.
And yet extremely British.
Yeah, it's literally the most British thing you can imagine. There was an American reporter who works for Wall Street Journal in Europe. He actually sat through all the press conferences that Bob Bradley has said, measured out like how many times he'd said American words versus British words. Unreal. Like, pick on his tactics. Like, there's something that makes sense to do. So, there is my wanker this week. And that, of course, brings us to the end of the podcast. 4/20/16. 20th episode in 2016 for the fourth season. I think we're inching towards 150 episodes.
Sure. I guess we should probably count that up.
We're getting real close. Hopefully this one wasn't it. But if you have questions, contacts, anything you want to get a hold of us about, we're all for that.
Yeah.
Get a hold of Jeremy at Jeremy Lance on Twitter. You can find me at Wrong Side of Pond, or you can email us contact@wrongsideofthepond.com.
Leave us a review.
Yeah.
On whatever device or app or whatever that you listen to us on.
Yeah, we want those. Good ones, preferably. Good ones,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like one star, these guys are D-bags, not helping.
Yeah. If that's what you believe, ignore this portion of it.
Just email us. Contact@wrongsideofthepond. You guys are D-bags.
Odds are if you believe that, you didn't listen this far. Right. But
Ted, we don't want your review.
Oh, Ted. Yeah. Ted listened all the way in. All the way in. All right. See you in 2017. So here it is.